The word emergency, it means something unexpected has gone terribly wrong. Normal ways of doing things are not working. The fastest way to turn an emergency into a full disaster is to lose communications. Ham radio people understand emergencies. For over 70 years, they have provided free emergency communications for organizations. Ham radio, when normal ways of communications fail or get overloaded. The Amateur Radio Emergency Service. We'll be there.
This morning on Sounds of Awareness, we're going to talk about a group called Handy Hams. It's a group of folks that help people with disabilities become licensed amateur radio operators so that in times of an emergency, the disabled can become part of the solution rather than part of the problem.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Paul Van Dyke, and this is Sounds of Awareness. With all the earthquakes and snowstorms and various disasters, and there have been a lot of them lately. Believe me, this seems to be the year of disasters. Disabled people are sometimes left behind in disasters. Sometimes we don't really think of a disabled person as being much of a help during a disaster, but through the magic of ham radio, someone with a disability actually can be not only useful, but very much in the business of saving lives. Now, we have talked about ham radio a couple of times before on this program, but we haven't really been specific about how disabled people can be involved in it. Today, I have a guest, Matt Arthur, who is a licensed ham radio operator, amateur radio operator, and he is involved with an outfit called Handy Hams. So we're going to talk about various types of ways that a person with a disability can become involved in this hobby, or in this, actually, as the FCC refers to it, as a technical service, and have a great time goofing around when there isn't a disaster and being extremely important to the community and the world when there is. Matt Arthur, good morning and welcome to Sounds of Awareness.
Well, good morning and thank you, Paul, and glad to be here. I've been a ham radio operator for, I guess, about 26 years, I guess, and I've seen a lot of changes, some for the better, some for the worse, maybe, but boy, I've really enjoyed ham radio over the last 25 years or so, and glad I could be a part of the show.
Well, ham radio is, we often refer to as ham radio or amateur radio, and of course, generally, people think anybody that has a two-way radio of any kind that isn't, you know, the police or fire or something is a ham radio, and there are several services, and this is not to be confused with Citizens Band or what is commonly known as CB. Can you kind of give us some basic differences between, say, what a ham radio operator is and a Citizens Band?
Well, a ham radio operator, number one, you have to have a license, which is issued by the Federal Communications Commission, and you know, you actually have to pass a test to get a license. You know, you have to prove that you know a little bit of electronic theory, and of course the Federal Communications Commission's rules and regulations, and that sort of thing. So, and we are also allocated a much broader frequency range to work with. Say, the Citizens Band, the service, is only in the 27 megahertz band, and we have frequencies all over the radio spectrum to work with as amateurs.
What actually is, obviously, since you have to take an exam to be a ham radio operator, what was the original idea with amateur radio anyway? I see it in the reading through the rules and regulations, it's referred to as a technical service. So is there something that that ham radio operators do besides just talk back and forth on the radio?
Well, oftentimes, you know, of course, the service has changed over the years now. Obviously, when amateur radio originally started, it was around 1912, and radio was really just, you know, beginning at that point, you know, and was a real experimental at that point, I guess. And so, you know, originally, I think as a technical service, which meant that you were technically proficient at, you know, working on your station and maybe even at that time, of course, building equipment. Now, still today, people build their own equipment, but not nearly as much as in the past. But you still have to understand how the equipment works a little bit. You know, you may have to do some antenna work or have somebody help you if you can't. In my case, I have help with some of that. But, you still have to understand how the radio works to really be a good amateur radio operator, I think.
Okay, well, that I understand it. So it's really kind of an experimenter's hobby then. I know I was talking to somebody here locally a while back who's a local amateur radio operator, and he mentioned that he's doing something called packet radio, and apparently they're experimenting with some digital modes of communication. And he pointed out to me that I believe it was his nephew that is one of the astronauts on the space station up there, and occasionally when they come over, they can talk via ham radio, and the public school kids, when a ham radio operator shows up to share, they actually can talk to folks on the space station and use satellite communications. So it's really, from what I understand, a lot more involved than just, you know, sitting back and forth, talking back and forth on the radio.
Oh yeah, and there are just so many different things that you can do with amateur radio. It's almost limitless, you know. And sure, we do sit and talk back and forth quite a bit. You know, that is certainly a lot of it, but there are just so many things to do that you'll probably never do it all in a lifetime, as far as I'm concerned. And I've played with many different modes and things over the years. So
different modes meaning
different bands and different kinds of communications. You know, you mentioned now we are starting to experiment with digital communications. I've used, you know, well, Morse code. I still use it, even though it's not required to get a license anymore. I still use that. I've played with, you know, obviously we've used single sideband, which is a different voice mode, or repeaters. Now I'm starting to get into heavily a voice over internet protocol. We even use the internet in ham radio. So, it's we've always been on the cutting edge of technology. You know, over the whole existence of ham radio since, you know, around 1912, the early 1900s. Ham radio has always been on the cutting edge of technology, and like the GPS that we're seeing, the amateur radio or amateur reporting positioning system, that was all developed by hams, and the same thing that was developed by hams was now used by the police for their work. So it's just the way it's always been, I guess.
Okay, now a question somebody might ask, obviously, if you are blind or if you have some sort of physical disability, how can you operate radio equipment? I mean, for instance, being able to read the dial on your transmitter and receiver and so on.
Well, nowadays it's easier than ever. You know, most of the newer radios, or a good number of them, have voice frequency readouts in them. And some of the newest of equipment, it'll voice back just about everything the radio is doing. But it didn't, you know, it hasn't always been that way. Years ago when I got started, the voice readout was a real up-and-coming thing. So they were starting to experiment with it, but it wasn't mainstream. And so we used a whole variety of methods back then. Crystal calibrators, markers, would give you a signal every so many kilohertz. So that's something you kind of memorized or learned to work with on a receiver, and you just listened for that signal and counted your way up the band, if you will. Some radios had dials that we would actually file a little piece out of it or something, you know, just some little way that you would know that you're at a certain point. There's always been some kind of a way. There have been blind and other disabled hams since the beginning of ham radio, basically. And so I know in the past, and I've seen for some people who maybe have difficulty using their hands even, they would modify knobs to make it the knob in such a way that they could use it. Of course, nowadays, they're starting to get stuff so you can just sit there and talk to it and tell it what to do. And so there are definitely a variety of ways to go about that, I guess.
We're talking this morning with Matt Arthur. He's a blind amateur radio operator. And you're listening to Sounds of Awareness from KBOO-FM 90.7 in Portland. We're talking with Matt this morning about the fact that especially with all of the disasters going on, such as the earthquakes and the snowstorms and other things, the floods and whatnot, that disabled people, rather than being victims, can often be extremely helpful in saving lives and property during emergencies through the use of amateur radio, or as it's often called, ham radio. And we were talking just now to summarize how a person with a disability can operate a radio if you're blind or if you have a physical disability. And apparently it's a lot easier now than it used to be because of the technology improving. But even back in the beginning of the amateur radio, beginning back in around 1912, let's talk about the organization that you belong to. You belong to a group called Handy Hams, which I think is a great name. They're out of Golden Valley, Minnesota. And I'd like you a little bit, Matt, to tell us about what Handy Hams is and kind of, if you can, maybe a little history of them and what they do and what people need to know about them and all that. Can you give us...
Well, the Courage Handy Hams started, or the Handy Ham system, as we call it, started in Rochester, Minnesota, by a fellow named Ned Carman, whose amateur call is Whiskey Zero Zulu Sierra Whiskey, W0ZSW. And he was a doctor, I guess, and used to go around to people's homes who were shut in and that. And being a ham, he thought, wow, what a way to help some of these people, be in touch with the world around them. And so he got some nuns involved in the program and got several of them their amateur radio license. They worked and earned their amateur radio license, and they then started helping people with disabilities, people in wheelchairs. We work with people with all various disabilities, and started helping these people get on the air. And then eventually the program was taken over or moved to the Courage Center, which is in Golden Valley, Minnesota. And now we're moving our headquarters. We have moved the headquarters to Camp Courage, which is out at Maple Lake, Minnesota. So we're sort of going through a transformation of location and things and that at this point as well. The Courage Handy Hams have helped people with disabilities in a variety of ways, certainly with study material. In the case of people who are blind, for an example, now we're doing a lot of online lectures, audio online and that they can listen to. All of the study material has been recorded into audio and MP3 files and that sort of thing. We used to, obviously send out a lot of tapes and had a huge tape program going.
And I bet that was expensive, too. I mean, isn't it? It's a lot less expensive to do it online, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely a lot less expensive, yes. And, of course, as the tape technology sort of gets more antiquated, that gets more expensive, not only sending them, but keeping the equipment up. We probably won't be running the tape program, for a lot longer because it's just simply the expense of it.
You know, just as an aside, there's a magazine that I love to subscribe to, and it's been going on for, I think the magazine itself was published maybe even 100 years ago in various formats, in Braille and so on, and then on recording, on records, old phonograph records, and then on tape, on cassettes. And just within the last 4 or 5 months, they have quit doing any kind of recorded stuff completely, and it is all an online magazine now. And I was kind of surprised. A lot of people weren't real happy about losing their tapes and hearing the friendly professional readers, but that had to be an expensive program to run.
Anyway, yeah, it is.
Just an aside. I'm referring to the Ziegler magazine. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But... So your courage, Camp Courage, now you mentioned a Camp Courage, and I'm thinking it almost sounds like a summer camp. Do they have various activities besides ham radio or having to do with ham radio that's in a camp-like setting?
Well, the Camp Courage has a lot of various summer camps for kids and adults with other disabilities. We have had some ham radio activities at some of those, to kind of introduce people to ham radio at various times. But we also have the Courage Handy Hams Radio Workshop, or the what we call the Radio Camp. And this year, it's going to be May 21st to the 28th, Friday, May 21st to Friday, May 28th, at Camp Courage in Maple Lake. And the best way to find out more about the Handy Hams Radio Camp would certainly be our website, www.handyham.org, handiham.org. But basically, we do have all three levels of licensed classes in ham radio. We have the technician class for beginners, general class, it's kind of an intermediate class, and then what we call the extra class license are the three levels of license. Plus, we have operating skills, and that helps people who are already licensed, may have a tech or a general or even an extra. We have operating skills to help people hone their operating skills, I guess, and learn more about the hobby. We have several stations that will be on the air that week under a couple of different call signs. We'll take a boat out on the lake, maritime or marine mobile, whatever you want to call it, and operate from out in the lake on 20 meters, or have a radio on the boat with an antenna and operate from the boat and work all over the world and that. So yeah, there'll be a lot of activities during the camp.
Okay. Now there are a couple of terms that I heard you use, and maybe we need to define these. We talk about 20 meters. Nobody would probably know what that is. The radio wave, instead of being called or designated by frequency in kilocycles or kilohertz or megahertz, used to be referred to by its wavelength, the wavelength of the signal. And so when people talk about 20 meters or 2 meters or 160 meters or something, that has to do with the frequency, but it is actually the designation of the actual length of the radio wave. And there was something else at the beginning. You mentioned the call sign of the guy who started the Courage or the Handy Hams, and you were saying some what sounded like some code words like Zulu or something. Can you tell us a little bit about what that I believe it's referred to as the phonetic alphabet?
Yeah, the phonetic alphabet. Each letter is sort of assigned a word. So Z is for Zulu, or A is Alpha, M is Mike, usual words that you can, so that when you spell a word, say my name is M-A-T-T, Matt, you would say Mike, Alpha, Tango, Tango.
And what's the purpose of doing that? Is that just for clarity, so that you don't get like, oh, is it Mac, M-A-C-C, or is it M-A, or whatever?
Correct. It helps.
So the phonetic alphabet then is a way that you can communicate when conditions are sort of difficult. We're talking with Matt Arthur, who is an amateur radio operator, and he is associated with the Handy Hams organization that helps people with disabilities learn to become amateur radio operators. One of the questions that people often have is, well, I guess two questions. What is the age, is there an age limit on, how young? I mean, do you have high school kids? I know they have older guys in the club. Do girls get involved with ham radio? And, is it a science type thing that girls like too? Those kinds of things. Tell who gets involved with ham radio?
Well, basically, anybody and everybody gets involved in ham radio. There is no age limit for getting a license. You just simply have to be able to pass the FCC test. And there's, of course, plenty of study material on that available. I've talked to kids as young as 8 or 9 on the air at some point, and I've talked to guys as old as 99 years old.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say as old as the host of this program. I was going to have to come back there and smack you around a little. So it's really not an old man's hobby.
No, it really isn't. And of course, you can be as technically inclined, or maybe not as technically inclined as possible. However you want to say it. You just have to learn a certain amount to pass the test. What you do after that is kind of your own. But
I guess it's like
something for everybody.
I guess it's like anything else. If you get like a driver's license, you can just barely pass the test and still cut people off and whatnot, or you can really be a good driver and to use the comparison, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of a comparison. I would hope that that ham radio isn't as extreme as driving.
Yeah, that is for sure.
But in any case, there's something there for everyone. I know people who are housewives and stuff who mainly are into it just because kind of their husband is, and they may talk on the air once in a while between each other or, something like that, and may not even get on the air a lot. But yet, when there's a disaster or something, they'll get out and help,
In a disaster situation, I always think of... whenever my wife and I go on trips anywhere, I usually have my cell phone with me. But if there's a problem with electricity or internet goes down, or you got no telephone, you got no internet, do these radios still work?
Oh, sure. We have always some way to power something, either battery or some people have generators and stuff that they can get going and get something on the air. Certainly a handheld radio will work. It may not go real far, but most likely somebody will hear you. And, of course, during Katrina and various disasters, they didn't have power, so they had to rely either on generators or batteries or solar power or whatever they could come up with.
Well, someone told me that, for example, during Katrina, the one of the problems that various services had, for example, the state sheriff, state police weren't able to talk to the county sheriff, and the county sheriff wasn't able to talk to the local police, and the fire department couldn't talk to anybody except maybe the ambulances or something. And what I understood was that the ham radio operators could be relay people between and among these various services. Had you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah. That happens often during any disaster, because each service like that is, in their case, assigned a certain frequency or a small set of frequencies, and that where the amateurs don't have that. We have such a wide variety of frequency ranges and that available that we can communicate either over a short distance or a long distance, whatever is kind of necessary to get the job done. And that's very often how hams help, is being a relay between services when either their repeaters or infrastructure is down, or when power is down. It'll go from one person then to another person if necessary. However, they've got to do it.
You can talk to folks. You've been trained. Usually, you get
some training, or kind of know what you're doing.
Now, you can talk to folks in other countries with ham radio also?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, like with the Haiti disaster, there have been a lot of communications going on ham radio between Haiti and the United States and maybe other countries. I'm not sure. But, yeah, the tsunami, the first communications out of that area was ham radio. Out of that island, I can't remember the name of the island near India. Well, they were actually going to go out there just to operate for fun, and they actually ended up being quite necessary for communications for that disaster.
Well, Matt Arthur, it has been a real pleasure this morning speaking with you about ham radio and about the ability of disabled people to operate those ham radio stations and talk to folks around the world and experiment with different types of digital communications and satellites and all this kind of stuff. And if you want to know about a little more about ham radio, for people with disabilities. Get in touch with the Handy Ham organization, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M-S. Is that correct?
No, don't forget the S. H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M.org.
Okay.
Handyham.org. And if you don't have a disability, you can also look at ARRL, their website, the American Radio Relay League, at www.arrl.org.
Okay, and we will, of course, on our Sounds of Awareness webpage, have links to some of these things. There are local radio clubs, amateur radio clubs, all over the country and in various other countries besides the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
So you can check in your local area for an amateur radio club or a ham radio club, and I think you'll find that people are very willing. Hams are really very friendly people as a rule and are willing to help people get involved in it. And the cost of the equipment, let's briefly touch on the cost of equipment. It can be anywhere from a few dollars to thousands, kind of, can it?
Yes, that's correct. You know, I've been seeing the price of handhelds, in fact, kind of come down. You can buy a nice little VHF handheld for maybe $120 or find one used even cheaper than that, and all the way up to, well, you know, millions of dollars if you want to put that in
handheld,
the hobby,
meaning those, like those little walkie-talkie things like you see the police use, kind of thing.
Right. That's what a handheld is.
Yeah.
And I myself have helped out with disasters. As a matter of fact, I did help in a flood here a few years ago where a couple of us, three of us from the county, went over to Rushford, Minnesota, where they had a flood, and was there all 9 hours. I was the main communications in and out of that town. I'd never been to the town, didn't know the people or anything. You know, I had to figure it all out on the fly real quick.
Oh, I'll bet.
That was quite an adventure.
I'll bet it was. Well, Matt, thank you for speaking with us this morning. Matt Arthur has been our guest this morning on Sounds of Awareness, talking about handy hams, about amateur radio, especially for people who have disabilities. I mean, it's ham radio is really for everybody, but
yeah,
this is a hobby and an area of interest that folks can get involved with, whether or not you have a disability.
Right. And for any hams that are out there, my call is Kilo Alpha Zero Papa Quebec Whiskey.
Okay, I like this, especially the whiskey part. And if you have too much whiskey, you can become a papa sometimes. Whether you want
maybe
to or
that's
not.
There you go.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Sounds of Awareness. For more information about our program and guests, please visit kboo.fm/soundsofawareness. Our screen reader friendly website may be accessed at publicradio113.weebly.com. This program is independently produced for KBOO-FM by Paul and April Van Dyke. I'm Paul Van Dyke, inviting you to join us next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.